Happy, what is it, daylight savings. Thank goodness. Ooh, we all need that. Thank you, Sue. It's always great to be back up here. Now, you. Thanks for reading that. I live in, actually, this is still kind of loud. I live in Georgia, down the road. But we come up here a lot. So, let's see. It's great to have a small... Is that too loud, guys? That's good? Okay. So let's go around the room here, get to know everybody, since we're nice and small. I'd like to ask a few questions. If you have been in some sort of spiritual group, like this is a spiritual group, Unity, Religious Science, some of those centers for spiritual living, stand up if you've been in it, so we get a sense of the experience here. Very good. So I know most of our, I don't know Don or I don't know Carla, Leo. Okay, so everybody can sit down, and I'm going to ask questions now. So Leo, what group were you in?
Leon.
Is that Leon, I mean?
Just this one.
Oh, okay, very good. And how long?
He's a lapsed Catholic. He's my husband.
Oh, I didn't know you went with Sue. God bless you. Say no more. We're going to go to Carla.
Here and one in Waynesville, and there's one in San Jose.
Oh, San Jose. Yeah, that's a big one. Wow. How long ago did you come over?
I moved here about a year and a half ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
Center
cool.
Center for Spiritual Enlightenment.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do podcasts of all those centers around. It's pretty cool. And Don, what groups were you in? This
well,
one?
Hard to really focus on it, but here that I joined a year or so ago, but I was part of Open Door in Silva.
Okay.
Until it closed down.
Mm-hmm.
But before I moved here, many years in a Presbyterian church, a very progressive Presbyterian church, and I was very progressive for that church.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's good. What we could release, right? What we could release from some of the teachings. Release, let go, throw away. Gotcha. Open Door, and I've been up there, and that was Barbara, right? Yeah. And what about you guys, Milton and Donna?
I can say that I've been on a lifetime study for a very long time in many different religions. And I recently had a heart attack, so I can't really go on. I wish I could go on and tell you a lot more.
That's okay.
I'm pretty much
restless today. Well, we're happy to have you with us and your spirit. Thank you. And Donna?
Yes, I started in the 1980s at the Golden Pyramid of Light in Houston, Texas. Then sticking with Unity up to North Carolina, and then back to Florida with Science of Mind, Religious Science in Florida. The Church of Religious Science here in Asheville, Barbara Waterhouse, and I got the response saying that. And now the Waynesville Creative Thought Center. And sometimes here, when I'm a groupie for whoever speaks.
Yeah, well, those are all great groups. If you don't know about them, certainly, I consider this group, and I go to the one in Dillard, which is a spiritual center in Dillard called Wayfarers. And then your folks over in Waynesville, that's a nice group. And then, of course, we lost Barbara Waterhouse. She died about 2 years ago. She was the dynamite.
Oh,
I mean, they built that center in Asheville. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but that was quite a loss. Oh, and then he went, yeah, her husband, yeah. Yeah, well, they brought us great joy, and we're very grateful for all the spiritual teaching that's around. And I know we have, Cindy's my buddy, she drove me, not that I can't drive, but, you know, she drove me up the road from Clayton. And Christina's new, and if you want to share anything, you can. If not, we're happy to have you. Just learning a little bit. So you get a vibe, a little bit of these teachings that we've had. Cindy, would you give me my bag, please? There's something in there I need for later. My teaching is of the spiritual group, the center. They now call it Centers for Spiritual Living, but it used to be called Religious Science, and they changed that name. I think mostly because people kept thinking we were Scientologists. You know, people
really?
People would say to me, "Oh, that's Tom Cruise's church." You know, if I had Tom's money, I might say, yeah, but no. No, not at all. And it's in the same milieu as of a unity or, I'd say close to a unity. But they all come from the teachings of ancients, back to Plato and Aristotle, of thinking of the mind. So if I've talked here before and brought a chart and showed you all the religious teachers and how we got here. The man who started Religious Science, his name was Ernest Holmes, and he wrote the book in the 1928. That was his first big textbook. But he didn't want to do a church. He back then, you know, people went around and did lectures, and like Emerson, because Emerson was in the 1800s. But people would just do lectures and go around. And same thing with Ernest Holmes. He did a lot of lectures on the mind. The spirit, that's why he called it religious science, but he called it the science of the mind. So that takes me into my talk today, which is the mind. And I, last year we had a big change in our country, and some people got upset about, you know, politics and everything. And I have been involved in politics. I'm not going to get into it here. But a lot of people came up to me and said, gee, how are you doing? How are you feeling about all the changes? And I said, well, what are you talking about? You mean the Ohio State Buckeyes won the national championship?
Yes, they did.
So I chose to focus on my team because I'm originally from the great state of Ohio. So I focused on my team. And, you know, in my own mind, I'll deal with what I feel good about. And that's kind of what this talk's about. What can I control? What can I not control? And I'll do my part in every part of my life, which is what the talk's about today. So let me pull up the talk, and that gives you a little bit of a background. And I think everybody loves this little slide.
Okay.
Basically, take a look at it, and it really is your gift to take home and try to keep it in front of you, because this is just kind of that reset. No matter what spirituality you're in, I think just resetting our brains to say, look, what's in our control? Yes, Don?
Did you develop this?
Oh, no. I just pulled this off the web page.
Oh, okay.
This is not my personal one.
Okay, you know who did?
We can just give me credit.
Good for you, Dee.
Dee Daly.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably in all kinds of psychology books or something, but it was an easy thing for me to look at, and then I'm like, oh, I know what. I'll write a talk on that. unfortunately, I don't really know the author, because it wasn't on the document. If it were on the document, I would have noted it, I guess. So let me start with the mind. And my mindset is what I can control, and it's in the inside. So some of my talk today will be about how I use my mind to overcome some of the things. So I'll have some personal stories in here. The reason it's so important to focus on what's in your control is so much is not in our control. So much is not in our control. So how do we react to the setbacks, the failures, the perceptions of other people that might upset us? It's how we react that really, really is the key here. So one of the things I was thinking about when I was writing this talk is, when in my life was I really disappointed after something I'd worked on just fell apart or disappeared, or just didn't work out. And so a lot of times when I write these talks, I think back to my youth in Ohio. And I have a story, a true story of what happened when I was very disappointed. I was not a particularly good student in junior high, and I was not good at art, but they had a project in another classroom about geography. So I decided I would enter into this project. I would make a map of the state of Ohio on a piece of plywood, and I got this great idea that I could do it with the old-fashioned way, you know, salt and flour and water, plaster, that way in the old days. But I made this cool map, and it was a topographical map of the Strait of Ohio, the flat and the high and everything. And so I was so proud of myself. And I really wasn't a good student, but this I knew was going to be, this was going to be my day. I mean, this was fabulous. So I walk, I do it at night. I get up in the morning, I walk to the bus. I go to the bus, I sit on the bus, I visit with my friends. I'm sure I'm talking, carrying on with my friends. And then I get off, the bus stops at the school, and I get off. And you know what happened is the bus had jolted all my homemade paste. So this gorgeous map on a piece of plywood was gone. All I had was the outline. I was so disappointed. And then at the same time I was writing this talk, this is actually version two, because the night I was writing it on Friday, it disappeared on my laptop. And that never had happened to me before. And it was 9 pages, 1,420 words, because I count the words. You can do that on, because I have to stay on time. And so it's like, well, wait a minute. I lost the map years ago. And now I've just lost this talk, and I'm pretty good with technology, so I spent an hour diagnosing it. I just couldn't find it. So I thought, well, that is a great story. How did you handle the disappointment? And I think that's where your mindset comes in, because all of a sudden I realized, well, okay, I can write another talk. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I probably have another talk in a binder. And then I thought to myself, I can make another map. Because I liked making the map. So there's that breaking point of, oh, it's a dread. But if your mindset, I must have had a little new thought in me as a kid, because I really vividly remember being so disheartened over losing my map, but realizing I could make another map. Because it's a universal principle of our teaching that it's an abundant universe. It's an abundant universe. And I say that a lot. Especially when people get upset, and I get upset. One of the groups I'm in, I'm on a board of a group, and we've been working real hard for a couple of years, and we wanted to get new people so we could, it would be a sustainable group, and we could get a break. And one or two people on the board were like, oh, we're never going to get anybody to take this job. You've heard that.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember saying, it's an abundant universe. I said it right there at the meeting, and they were all like, oh, there goes Dee, woo-woo. she goes to that chapel up the road. But, you know, I just kept saying, put it out there. I mean, we are not that important. There are other people who could do this work, folks. Let's open our arms up, and let's seek them, find them. Let's tell them we need them. And sure enough, we got 3 new people on the board. The rest of us can relax. But if we didn't have that mindset, like, wait a minute, if we'd fallen into that, oh, yeah, woe is me, you know, I truthfully do not have time for woe is me in my life. So the next thing I want to talk about having to do with what's in our control has to do with the opinions of others that's out of our control. And it's not on this chart, but being perfect is really, a lot of us want to do everything perfect to please our parents, our friends, whatever, our spouses. And perfectionism is just totally a waste of time. I'm thrilled to tell everybody I'm no longer a perfectionist. You could ask many of you have met my wife, Rebecca. She didn't come today. I brought my friend, Cindy. But my wife would be the first to tell you I'm not a perfectionist. Years ago when we lived in Atlanta, we had a ranch house. And when we bought the house, my wife said, okay, you're going to stay home and take care of the house because you're always out partying. I mean, you work and then you go party. I said, don't worry, I'm going to take care of the house. We're going to buy this ranch house. So we bought the ranch house, and one of my jobs was cut the grass. I'm like, bought a lawnmower, I'm down for this. So I come home, I didn't cut it on the weekend. I came home from work, I cut the grass. So I went back in the house and I said, I cut the grass, we're looking good. So then she said, great, thank you. And then she goes out and she goes, you cut half the front lawn, half, and put the lawnmower up. I mean, what will the neighbors think? And I'm like, I don't care what they think. I got tired. I'll cut the other half tomorrow. So I think that's a little bit of a perfectionist. She was like, I don't care what they think. You know, I'm a religious scientist. You know, they'll be fine. You know, it is funny. So speaking of perfectionism, I'll tell this quick story about the monks. A new monk arrived in the monastery, and he was assigned to help the other monks to copy the text by hand. He noticed that the new monk said, well, we're copying off of old copies. That might be a problem. So the senior monk said, oh, well, go downstairs and get the originals, young monk. So the younger monk goes downstairs, and he's finding things. And then he's down there a long time, so they send somebody down to check on him. Hours later, nobody had seen him, so they went downstairs, and they heard him sobbing coming from the back of the cellar. And they said, what's going on? And the man said, well, the word is celebrate. Get it? The word is celebrate. Oh, that was good. So even monks are not perfect. I like that one. So speaking of religions, I'm a former Catholic, and the Catholics, you know, they were real big on guilt and shame and, you know, doing everything the right way, or what will people think of you? And I must admit, I still have some of that in me. It's still a residual. You're never going to get, anyway, at this age, I'm still not over all of that teaching, because I went to Catholic school with the nuns and the rulers and, you know, just going to church every day and, you know, just the whole thing. And my mom and dad, they were like always wanting us to go to chapel, to church. Although when I'd come home and complain about something, like, oh, mommy, my best friend's going to die because she's a Protestant, my mother would always say, oh, don't pay attention to that. So it was always kind of a mixed message at my house, you know, because, you know, they were Catholics, but they didn't. But when you're young, you're really impacted by it all. So about this summer, I went to the dollar store, and I had to pick up some stuff. I can't remember exactly what, but cards and some crafts. I got home, and from the dollar store, I paid, got my stuff, came home. And in my jacket, I had shoplifted the Elmer's glue. And true, and it was like a trigger. I was just like, oh my God, I have shoplifted, you know, 92 cents. And they've got closed circuit TV. And I envisioned, it's a small town, the local police coming to my door, my name on the newspaper, D. Daly is a shoplifter. I was just panicked. And I had to go to a meeting that night, so I said to Rebecca, my partner, I said, you go back right now and you pay for this. And I mean now. And she's like, do you think you're overreacting? And I'm like, yes, I am, but I can't help it. I'm a Catholic. And you go pay. So again, I couldn't let that go. And she did go. She was kind enough to pay, because I just couldn't wait till the next day. So it stays with us. So it's a constant. I love that. You know, you're constantly trying to pay attention to these things about, well, in this case, I really can't control my early I really can't control that I went to Catholic school and the nuns and the teaching. But what I can control is my mindset today, and at least be aware of it when I go go kind of goofy. Let's discuss moving on from setbacks, because that's also on here. You know, how do you respond to a setback or a failure? When I was 59 years old, our financial advisor predicted the recession. In 2007, he predicted that we were going to have a big recession. I was retired. My partner was retired. And he said, one of you has to go back to work because, you know, I told you you'd be fine, but you're not going to be fine. So I'm like, oh, man, no, I love my retirement. And Rebecca said, well, that Dee will be the one to go back to work, you know. So I was volunteered. And the idea felt kind of overwhelming because I'd been out of work about 4 years. And I thought, well, how am I going to find something I really like, something in my field, something that's fun, something that pays well. You know, because I'm 59. And it was a little scary. And an acquaintance, and I say an acquaintance, not a friend, said to me, you will never be able to get a good job at your age. We know people like that. Yeah, I mean, I'm a kid, I'm a baby. So,
yes.
I mean, but, you know, in the corporate world, you do have, there is some perception that I might not be as good as the young people, you know. Anyway, I didn't let that sit in my head at all because our teaching is it's an abundant universe. I'm not putting my mindset there. I'm putting my mindset into, you know, what can I do? How can I get an equally great job? And since I had worked so long in my industry, I started networking with all the people I knew from my industry. And in about 5 months, I got an equally great job. So there was a way to do it. It wasn't quite as dire as that acquaintance made it sound. So yeah, I moved on, and I was happy, and I did that job about 5 years. So I was a senior citizen of the group, but it was really a good experience, and I enjoyed it. So you know, you just can't mindset, opinions of others. We set it aside. We've got to take care of ourselves. This is all part of nurturing ourselves as well. Everybody's probably heard of the book Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she also wrote Big Magic. And she talks about opinion of others. See, that's another big one. It's out of our control, the opinions of others. As we get older, I think we do realize that. So I'm going to read what she says. This is from Big Magic. She said, we all spend our 20s and 30s trying so hard to be perfect, because we're worried about what other people think of us. Then we get into our 40s and 50s and we finally start to be free because we decide we don't give a damn what anyone thinks of us. But you won't be completely free until you reach your 60s and 70s when you finally realize this liberating truth, nobody was ever thinking about you anyhow. There's a lot of truth to that. Nobody was ever thinking of you anyhow. And that brings me to another youth story. When I was a teenager, we had a teen dance, and my mother said, I will make you a dress. Well, you didn't know my mother, but she was a stay-at-home mom, and she would pick up a variety of hobbies. None really that successful. But, you know, she was staying at home. She had three kids, myself and two older brothers. And she, like a year before she offered to make my dress, had made my brother, had knitted him a sweater. But apparently she got the wrong fabric or something because he put on the blue sweater and in every day it grew. It's like, obviously it was, you know, so we made a lot of fun of mom about my brother's sweater that just kept growing. So when she said she was going to make my dress, I was a little nervous. But I said, okay, Mom, go ahead and make my dress. Well, we lived in a small town in northern Ohio, and we only went to the store like once a week because we only had one car, and my dad worked. So she had a limited supply of, at the at the fabric shop. So she comes home with my dress material. It's red check. Pretty big. And I was what they call husky, or, you know, I wasn't slim. I wasn't really chubby. That's Claudia. That's the word. I was chubby. And I thought, I don't know. That I didn't say anything to my mom. I'm like, I thought to myself, that looks like a tablecloth. I'm going to go to the dance and look like a picnic table. And she I was so anxious about it. But I went. And you know what? Nobody paid any attention. It wasn't. Again, to the Elizabeth Gilbert statement, they're not really paying that much attention to you. I mean, they're teenagers. Everybody's paying attention to themselves and worried about how they look and everything. So, you know, take a note from our fellow teenagers. It's all about how we take care of ourselves, going back to the mindset. So I'm going to wrap up because I don't want to ramble on too much on about it. I really think that this is just so valuable to take home and talk to your family and friends about. See how it helps you deal with every day. And I do want to close with a statement about, yeah, life is not always going to go the way we want it to. And we have to keep working and coming to these spiritual groups and reading our books and doing the book club and things like that, sharing with like-minded people. That's what's so great about our centers, this unity you'll find here. And life is not always fair. As Johnny Carson says, if life was fair, Elvis would be alive and all the impersonators would be dead. And so it is.